counts was recorded on the 13th of July, 1988, medium later.
Have you been listening to what we're talking about?
Yes, indeed.
Bless you.
We certainly have been listening with tremendous interest, because although I understand the medium has passed a remark that he's not so sure about this circle, he probably has a feeling at times of disappointment, because perhaps from his point of view we haven't reached as high as we would have liked, and yet at the same time listening to your conversation convinces me that we are indeed on the right path. The fact that you've come together as you have and frankly and openly discussed with each other aspects of your own feelings and emotions and your deep interest in the spiritual achievements that we hope to attain shows to our satisfaction that we are indeed making some progress, because you obviously are dissecting yourselves to some extent and going into some detail about your thoughts, your innermost thoughts, and your reactions to many things that are happening around and about you in a psychic and a spiritual sense and way. You have given us a great incentive, and we've been patiently standing, to some extent you might say, in the background. They haven't always, of course, been able to manifest. There are various reasons for that. But the point is, tonight, speaking from my own point of view, and listening as I have been to some of the things that you've been saying, shows me that you have reciprocated and you have come to a certain point whereby we are now able, more than perhaps ever, come to a level whereby we can tune in a way which we had long hoped to so do. You see, you didn't come here together by chance, though it may seem so. In a sense, we arranged it to a point we chose you, and of course we had hoped, and we still know, that what faith we have in you will be fulfilled, because you yourselves are kindly analytical and also at the same time striving for mental and spiritual advancement, so that you can reach out more surely and more securely to the things that we are anxious to give you. Of course, there are moments of times when we're not able perhaps to do as we would wish, because there will always be fluctuating conditions. These conditions are not in a sense due to any of you here. They are fluctuating conditions which are around and about the earth, and also when you sit here by souls that are gathered, mostly, fortunately, souls who have come, as we have come, to bring enlightenment and to strengthen you in all the things that we feel are necessary on the level of the spirit. But of course, we have to accept the obvious fact that all manner and kind of souls from all different levels, all different conditions of life, are attracted, because though you may not realize this, when you sit together as you do, there is, in a sense, a form of illumination. It's a spiritual thing in itself, and it creates a condition which is more often than not very conducive to communication. Of course, there are times when it's not possible to communicate. That means there is, as it were, certain things that are happening which are detrimental, and indeed there may well be times when we might feel it's not a wise thing to come and make a link or a contact or try to speak to you. You see, you must always remember, as indeed I'm sure you do, there are all manner and kind of influences brought to bear upon your world, and of course when you sit together, upon you as a group. There are influences sometimes which are detrimental. I'm not suggesting that they are evil forces, but there are souls, unfortunately, on both sides of life who are not at least what one might call progressed. They're not necessarily evil or bad in themselves, but they could even be mischievous or be misleading or indeed assume a role to which they are not really suited. Or they're not even allowed, or should be allowed, to assume. You know, you have to be very careful in this spiritualistic activity and this business of making links and contacts. You should always approach the situation with reverence, of course, in the right sense, I mean, of reverence. Not assuming that we are gods, because we're not. We're people like yourselves, who progressed and go further on the road to spiritual realization. But we are not perfect, fortunately. And there are many, many conditions of individuals and conditions of peoples who, I'm afraid to say, that I must say, you should avoid. That's why a lot of these open circles held in spiritual churches are highly dangerous. And I think one should avoid them if one possibly can. You know, like to some extent obviously will attract like. When you come here, you all come here with the highest ideals, with a desire for spiritual realization and knowledge and experience that will not only benefit you, but if it is, as you term it, tape recorded, will go out to less fortunate people, perhaps people who are interested in this subject and yet cannot go to a medium or a judge, and indeed in some instances it's just as well that they don't, because unfortunately we do know that a lot of the era of spiritualism is being conducted by peoples who perhaps are well-meaning and possibly well-intentioned, but who in themselves are not advocates of the things that we are trying to achieve and to do. I mean, I don't wish to be unkind, but you see a lot of people start investigating, I was going to say almost at the lower end, which is not quite the truth. Because the point is, love is the all-encompassing thing that matters most. And if you have lost, as you term it, someone who is near and dear to you, has been a vital part of your life, then obviously you are searching and seeking with the right motive. That is, if there is truth in this subject termed spiritualism, that it may be possible for you to receive some kindly remark, or perhaps receive some personal proof which will uplift you out of the darkness of material things, to know that life continues. In the beginning we understand the motives of most people who go into the spiritualistic movement, as you term it, and their motives are invariably sincere enough. But unfortunately, a lot of people confuse spiritual realization and truth with a lot of the psychic, which bears little resemblance to that which we in ourselves are entirely in trying desperately to achieve and to do. You come far, far away from the initial beginnings of your search, and you are asking questions, questions which, if we are enabled to answer, which we shall endeavor to do, and that is why we want you from time to time to come together, form your questions, and endeavor to put them to us as best you can, and we will endeavor so to answer them. There may be points that we cannot go into for some reason or another. I doesn't suggest for one moment that, from my point of view, that I or anyone else on this side can answer all the various points that you will raise. You see, you have to remember, above all else probably, that the voice of the Spirit, though it is in a sense not limited, to some extent can only be utilized and given out according to the situation of the moment and the time when it takes place. The voice of the Spirit, as I put it in this fashion, is innumerable souls. You may have a communication from one person, and yet the majority of that which is being said by that person is due to the influence of innumerable other peoples who are also on the same, as it were, length, a wavelength, as you term it, and transmitting down through different vehicles of expression. I perhaps not clarifying this very well, but you see, people get into the habit of saying, oh, my guide is so narrow, and my guide says this, and my guide says that. I am not saying this is not true, but what I am saying is that we have many forms and many ways of expressing that which we want to say or to give. And an instrument on this side, who's become accustomed to working with a certain instrument or medium on your side, he may be the mouthpiece, yes, but he's not necessarily always the intelligence. He's not necessarily always the one who is giving, as it were, the message of the Spirit from a higher level of consciousness. And that is why sometimes you'll have confusion. You know, I know that this does happen, particularly on certain levels. A medium may be a very good instrument at times, and he may be well tuned in to a certain guide or guides who will, because of their long interest and association, will to some extent take over. And as it were, temporarily, the medium loses his identity and is taken over by another entity on this side of life. But always, though it may seem, indeed, of course, this is something that obviously happens more often than not. Like with Mickey, you hear a childish, or what appears to be a childish, Lord Blimey, I think you call him, Cockney voice. But I can assure you that though there may be some element there of the old self, the old Mickey that once walked the streets of London and sold that neat newspapers, but he is an agent too for innumerable other entities, people perhaps who for some reason or another cannot manifest personally themselves, and then he will transmit the message as best he can. But sometimes, because I suppose for various reasons, he may not always get accurately exactly what was intended to be passed through to you. What we are aiming at in this group is to achieve, if we can, a link with various entities or souls, call them what you will, of individuals who have progressed far removed from the material concept of the old self. They have illuminated, as it were, various spiritual levels on this side. Now, I wish I could explain this more detailed and more fully. You see, you assimilate. I assimilated when I first came here a lot of things which, when on earth, I would have not accepted at all. I would have thought they were heresy, if anything else. But you see, the point is that when you are bereft of the old material body, when you to some extent have left behind the old self, there are at times intrusions. I use the word intrusions because when I first came over here, I was like, I was like a ship at sea. I was wondering if I was going to sail into a safe port. And indeed, it was as if I was in a turmoil and the sea was rough. And I was not a good sailor in consequence. Now, when I was on Earth, I thought I was a jolly good sailor. I thought I overcame all the problems and the difficulties more or less satisfactorily. I thought I was on safe waters, and the words and the message that I gave, I thought were, as far as I was concerned, the truth. But when you get out of that physical body and its restrictions, and you enter into this new experience, and you are in a sense temporarily, as I was anyway, very unsure, very unsettled, very insecure, I couldn't understand why. With all my knowledge, as I thought, once I had, and I hate to use the word dictatorial, but I suppose in a way I was rather dictatorial, I was telling everybody how they should live their lives, and if they were, as I hoped they would be, eventually saved, I found that I was really, in a sense, putting myself into the most invidious position, because I'm not saying there were not people here to help me, but you see, when you held a position such as I held for so many a year, and I was looked up to. I mean, let's face it, I was in a strange kind of way, without realizing it, I don't think I did realize it, I was full of my own importance. I assumed that I was in the position I was in because I'd earned it, because I'd worked towards that end, and because what I was doing, what I did, was for the good of others, and I was in a way considering myself not exactly self-sacrificing, but I did get a very false idea of my own importance. That's something I had to lose as quickly as possible. I found that the most difficult thing to do. So when you've been rogued and you've been accompanied by peoples whose main interest in not only because who you were, but how you looked. I mean, quite frankly, I found for the first time like a man stark naked. Of course I wasn't. I would have been so embarrassed if I had been. But the point is that I couldn't adjust myself. There were various people that I had known, mostly of course peoples of the church, peoples that I suppose really the special had looked up to me. And here they were, trying to talk to me, or perhaps not talking, because nobody talks. Now that's another strange thing. People always assume that you've got to enunciate, you've got to vibrate the atmosphere, you've got to form words. And here was I listening to people, and yet they weren't opening their mouths. I thought, how strange. And yet I could hear their thoughts. And their thoughts, some of the thoughts that were coming towards me, or I was receiving, seemed at odds. Seemed at terrible odds. I go, oh, no, that can't be true. Now, what the deuce is going on here? Am I really dead? Is this and I quite frankly, I was getting so irritated and so annoyed with myself and with other people. And I realize now, which I didn't realize then, they were all trying to save me. Now, I don't mean save me in the sense that the church understands the meaning of the term. But they're trying to get me out of myself. That's the weird part about it. Here was me, in a sense, my old self. They were trying to get me out of it and to find my reality of self. And they were trying to to get me to rid myself of all the things that I had for so long taught and believed. You see, the extraordinary thing is that I did believe. I mean, I really did believe. And I know that there were people who were in your world were using mediums and receiving so-called messages from the so-called dead. And I thought it was a lot of rubbish. And quite frankly, I did have one experience which I never told anyone. I did sit with a medium. I'm afraid I did it rather shabbily, looking back on it, because I didn't wear any of the church accoutrement. I had nothing to do with the church at all. I went along in an ordinary lounge suit to this rather odd woman. And, Adam, I should tell the story. But anyway, somebody arranged this for me because there was an organization that was searching into this business of spiritualism. And he said, you know, it would be an interesting thing if you went in incognito and had a seance. I said, a seance? He said, yes. He said, I know of a woman. She's not very well known, I suppose, in the spiritualistic circles, but I heard about this woman. And I said, well, do you mean to tell me that you've been going to these spooky meetings? And he said, well, yes, I have been to two or three. He said, I thought it might be interesting to see what really goes on. I said, well, where do you think I should go? He said, well, I think you'd like to find her interesting. Anyway, I went to some place in the East End of London, it was. There's some sort of terrace house, and, well, it was clean. It was kept clean. It was respectable to a point, yes. And she seemed quite a homely little body, I thought. And she didn't know, of course, who I was. And, I couldn't believe it, you know. She said, oh, yeah, she said, you know, you should be a medium. I thought, I don't mind it. She said, you're very psychic. She said, you're very sensitive. And you have an internal, whatever it was she was trying to point out to me, something to do with sensing and feeling. And I thought, well, I don't know what the hell the woman's talking about. I was getting really irritated, really. Then all of a sudden she came out with some statement, and I thought, my God, where'd she get that from? And she must have had someone say something to her about this. And she gave me something which was so astounding, and quite frankly, it was so personal. And although she never really mentioned the church as such, but she did talk about the ministry, that she mentioned certain things which I thought, well, maybe, yes, you know, but it was just something that she talked about which was so staggering to me. Anyway, I went out and eventually, and then I thought about it and I thought, well, I don't know, is there something in all this business? And I thought, well, I don't know, but she read my mind. And then I thought, well, I don't know how she would have done that. I hadn't thought about that person and that situation for a long, long time. It was something that happened in my youth, which I'd never discussed with anybody. In fact, I was rather ashamed of it. But it's something that I kept very secret within my innermost self. And here was this woman coming out, telling me about this person, giving me the name of the person, and also some place where I had known this person. I thought, my goodness me, she's in league with the devil. And I really thought that she would be. I thought, no, it's not right, I shouldn't get. I suppose that, in a way, strange enough, because of what was told me, put a prejudice in my mind against the whole business. So when I found over here that these people were demonstrating, in a way, I suppose, the power of the spirit in a way which I didn't understand or expect. And I really thought in the beginning, that early period of time, I can't say time, because how do I know It could have been, from your point of view of time, a few fleeting seconds. It could have been hours. I don't know. But all I know is that I followed the two people in particular to a place, now you call it a place, and it was the most important little place that I had known when I was a very small child. It wasn't an opulent place, it was a very small country place, a little house, and it was by a stream, and it had a familiar ring about it, and it took me a little while to realize that it was a replica of a place that I'd known as a child. I could go into depth on this, but I better not. But you know, what I'm trying to get through, perhaps not so well as I should like, is the fact that the reality of the spirit doesn't descend upon you even when you pass out of the turbid immediately. There are some people that I've met here, and indeed I've tried to help myself, who do not appear to realize in the initial stages of coming that they are dead. It's so some people think it's a sort of dream, and that eventually possibly they'll wake up and find themselves back on Earth. Now this business I can go to depth on all this and that really is fascinating. Although I do all the talking I shouldn't, but the point is that this reincarnation, I've learned a great deal about that, and I know for a fact that there are people who deliberately choose to return to Earth. Often their souls who've been here, as you would term it, for centuries of earthly time, who choose to return to Earth to do some special work. And you know, this is another thing. People say, well, if I return to Earth, and I remember where I went wrong, and I could undo some of the things that I did wrong. In other words, if I could avoid my mistakes, then that would be a wonderful thing. But of course, this is nonsense. Because if you're going back into your material life wanting to avoid the mistakes you made previously, then you're doing it through fear. You're not doing it through love. Everything you do should be by the desire to assist, to help, to uplift, to comfort, to rejoice in other people, and to help them in every way you can. And the operative word is love. Now, a lot of people on your side, that is, who are reincarnationists, more often than not, assume the idea that you have come back to do some special work for yourself. This is not so. You come back into material not to do things for yourself, but to do things for others, to open up their minds and their eyes and their hearts to the things that are true. You know, there's no selfish motive in most instances, anyway, of reincarnation. People, more often than not, have chosen the path to return, to be of light in the darkness of the material world in which you find yourselves. All the great teachers, all the great prophets, all the great messiahs, invariably, were old souls who chose to return for a temporary period of earthly time to open the eyes of those who would not see, whether it is or if one heard and read about. But unfortunately, when their work is done and they've set an example, more often than not, man, and I include myself, alters the whole picture. We build churches, we build organizations. We strangle the innocent, sweet truth, that childishness which brings such peace and such a quality into your world. You know, Jesus is reported to have said, and I'm sure he must have said it, suffer little children to come unto me, for the kingdom of heaven. How right that is. We are little children. When I came over here, I was like a little child, lost. With all my knowledge, all my experience, all the things that I'd said and done when on earth seemed as nothing, because I hadn't seen Jesus as a little child. I hadn't seen the quality and the love and the innocence. And you know, if only we could see ourselves as we really are. We grow up bonds of self in the material world, to some extent, obviously. You have to become materially minded. But you know, if only we could hold on, see the truly are of the real, and not swamp it covering of sophistication and the things which in themselves blind us to the truth of eternal love. You know, we get very disappointed. I suppose we shouldn't, because we once too lived in your world. We too suffered. We too had experiences of all manner of things which caused greater unhappiness. Look back as we do, prevail unhappiness in your world, the hatred and the malice in your world, due to religious intolerance at times has, well, much to answer for. And I see myself as I was in a high position, and yet I was probably in a sense lower than most of the peoples who came to listen to my voice. But you know, I'm talking to you in a way which perhaps at the moment I'm not able to clarify as I would wish. I come to you in the hope that together we may be able to achieve, which will not only be beneficial to each one of you, but which may come through the use of this recording machine that you have, uplifting and help others. There are many in the spiritless movement who will not listen to the spirit. How odd that sounds to say. They don't listen to the voice of the spirit. They listen to the voice which in a way comes from within themselves. They listen to themselves. And if something is given to them that pleases them, because it's on a certain material level, then they think they've been in touch. They haven't been in touch at all. One might say they are touched. But not in the spirit of things. I mean a little unkind. But you know, we want to see this movement, as you term it, of spiritualism. We want to see it cleansed. We want to see it opened up to the true vision of the spirit. We are waiting to break down the doors that are often locked against us. You know, these doors are what man has created. It happened in the churches throughout the centuries, in all the different religious bodies and organizations. The simple truth of the Spirit, the peoples of the Spirit, who return to bring knowledge and to bring love into your hearts and experience, were locked away, were pushed away. And many things that you read in the good book, as it is termed, and it is good in some respects, of course, but there's a lot of things that are errors, things that, of course, never happened anyway. And remember that Jesus himself said, greater things than these shall ye do, for I go unto my Father. Then, my friends, it says to you, and I say to you, that though Jesus performed great miracles, great deeds, things that were beyond man's comprehension in a way in his time on earth, you too can be like him. Tread the path that he trod. It was not an easy path. It was a difficult, hard path, and it led, of course, to crucifixion in his case. But the point is, my friends, you are given a great trust. You are given a great faith and a great realization and truth and knowledge, and you must not keep it to yourself. You must open up the voice of the Spirit, and not only just comfort those who mourn, that is vitally important, of course, but you must open up your hearts in the way that you can expand the things that truly are of the spirit on the level of which we are endeavoring to bring to you, it is much more important that man should know that he, in a sense, is responsible for his own salvation. No one can save you, only you yourself. No one who came into your world ever said or suggested that if you believed in him as a person, that you'd be automatically saved. Follow me, follow my example, endeavor to do that which I do, yes, which is very difficult, but that is your salvation, is what you do, what you are, what you achieve, how you sacrifice, if necessary, yourself for those less fortunate, to give love. This is the salvation of the soul. No one will take upon themselves the responsibility to save you. They will point the path, the way. They will help you. They will take off from you often the burden that you carry, and they will sit with you by the wayside when you have to. But the goal is there, that it is a path you must tread. No one can tread it for you. Be of good faith, my friends. Be of good heart. Know that we shall not fail you, and that which we intend and hope yet to do. We shall come together many a time, and I know that other souls here will come and speak and manifest, and we hope in ways which, well, we must not yet say this, which will give, not that you need conviction, but the ways in which you will know with a certainty how you are touched by the power of the Spirit. Anyway, my friends, we bless you. We send you forth in the darkness of your world, shedding a little light wherever you go. Bless you, bless you, bless you. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you.
Good.
Good.
Bye, Nikki.
Bye-bye.
That's fine.
Bye. Bye.